I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben.
Ben, today's topic is one that you came to me with, and I got to tell you, initially, I didn't think this was all that interesting, and that quickly faded to the back when, is that the right way to say that? Faded to the back?
Faded to the background.
It went, faded to away. It went to the wayside. Once I started to really dig into the history of traffic signs, and in particular, like what color they are, what shape they are.
Right.
The
yeah.
history of, you know, like when these all started, the standardization of, it's all very fascinating. It really is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's strange because traffic signs are one of the things that are ubiquitous in your life, even if you don't drive, right? We so rarely think about the things that we see every day, right? Like these things are, you know, if you think about it, if you want to understand just how many traffic signs are around you at any given moment, one of the best ways to notice them is just to look up traffic signs from another country, because they stick out like a, you know, like a sore thumb, whereas the ones that you grow up around are just such a natural part of your day-to-day existence that I bet you if you stopped and thought about it right now, you couldn't name how many traffic signs you passed since you woke up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's no doubt. But you probably, you somehow absorb the information that's on them or the direction that they're giving you.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you don't pay attention to certain signs, but you do pay attention to other signs. And there's a very good reason for that. There's a whole philosophy behind all this. And if you're tuning out saying, well, I don't really care about the color of traffic signs, the shape of them or anything like that. It's all old stuff. It's really pretty fascinating when you start digging into this and the history of them. It really is interesting. A lot of it, as we talk about this, I find that a lot of it just seems to make good sense. After years of determining, you know, what works, what doesn't work.
Right.
I think we've got a pretty good standardization process that's in place right now.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say this, I think that with improved, and this is maybe given a little bit away as we get, but I think with improved, you know, materials and the visibility issues and things like that we have. And I don't know about issues, maybe about visibility, improving.
Right. Potential, right? Innovations.
Innovations. That's maybe a better way to say it. With possible updates like that coming down the road, like durability and things like that, I think that that we're in a position where we could easily have an upgrade to our current systems.
Either, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Whether that's, you know, the way that they're created, the way that they're built. Mm-hmm. You know, the messages that they tell us, there's a lot of room for growth, I still think, but we're in a pretty good spot right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're in what will be called the glory days. let's do,
I don't know if I'd go that far, Ben, the glory days of traffic signs.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Okay. Maybe I'm being a little optimistic, but let's go through the history just real quick and see how far we've come. Cause, road signs, right? We think of traffic signs now, you know, yield, one-way, speed limit, minimum speed, things like that. Mm-hmm. But the earliest road signs far predate cars, far predate our civilization. They were just like milestones that gave you the distance to a place, you know? So like Rome, three units this way or something.
Three units, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going kind of vague with that. And there were these stone columns throughout the Roman Empire that gave the distance to Rome, which is where we get one of those sayings, all roads lead to Rome.
Interesting.
And the first road signs that we would think of as modern came along with bicycles.
Bicycles, no
yeah,
kidding.
Yeah, right toward the end of the 19th century. And that's because they were fast, they were tough to hear. Mm-hmm. So you needed to know what was going on. And then they also bikers needed to know potential hazards. But when the automobile goes mainstream, that's when we start seeing the signs that we have now.
And we're talking about like the late 1800s. So like even in 1899, I think.
Yeah.
This is maybe the first date that I have for any kind of official signage happening here in the United States. And we'll talk about mostly the United States here. So as early as 1899, horseless carriage owners in the New York City area met at the Waldorf Astoria. And they were the purpose was they were going to create this, I guess an early automobile club, you know, because all these guys have the horseless carriage now, right? So they're going to create this early automobile club, which was going to be the predecessor for the American Automobile Association, or AAA.
Right, yeah.
And part of their function was to place and maintain signs on main highways or principal highways going in and out of the city, of New York City. And up until that point, I mean, I guess you had to really think about, you know, what they were made of. They were you know, made of wood, or, you know, sometimes they were just pounded into the ground with, you know, someone used probably a rock on a stake and pounded
right.
it in.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of these signs were in disrepair. They were unreadable. They were oftentimes knocked down. You had no idea where you were going. It was very easy to get lost once you got outside of the city.
Right. Once you got to a place that was less densely populated, there are fewer people who are likely to maintain those signs. And what we see here as a result of this is a lot of work going into, I guess, the science and psychology of signs. Mm-hmm. Because what they were finding was that certain signs, even when well-maintained, were less likely to be noticed by drivers.
Right. And so you're talking about nighttime visibility in particular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. So, yeah. You know, early cars, they had very dim headlamps. And at nighttime, you know, out these dark country roads,
right.
You know, the woods caving in on all sides, I guess, you know, or, you know, coming in on you.
Yeah.
It's very, very dark out, maybe a moonless night or something. You're going to easily miss a sign that's non-reflective, that's painted in a color that you just simply can't see at night, you know, like whether it's red or black or whatever. So they're not really worried about contrast or anything like that, you know, to be able to see with even this dim light.
Mm-hmm.
The system was very poor at the time, and there really wasn't a system. That's the other thing, is that every little principality, every borough, every state, every city was doing things completely different. They all had their own way of doing things.
Yeah, there was no standard, which can be a huge problem. I think one of the best examples of the importance of standardization comes about when you see examples of railroads that use different gauge trying to meet up and form a terminal. It's something that'll come back and bite you. So in 1908 and 1903, like that period of time, we see a lot of work going into standardizing this stuff. And the United Kingdom and the United States have started adopting their own roadside systems, right? This is what you recognize. And not just in the US or the UK, because these countries had such a large sphere of influence in other countries, you'll see signs that are clearly influenced by the United States in these other nations.
Oh, sure. And the standardization, I mean, we can't, you know, emphasize this enough, that this is so critical, because as we were talking about earlier on, when we first started this podcast, you're saying you don't really know how many signs you've probably passed today on the way to work or the way to school or whatever. But you do know, you kind of subliminally have this idea of what they say and what they tell you to do.
Right.
And you know which ones to look for, which ones are important, which ones aren't necessarily important for your travel. And that's all part of the standardization. And the colors that have been chosen for the signs is critical as well. So it's the colors, the shapes, the message themselves that they put on the signs.
Right.
And all that stuff has changed over the decades, over the century, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we're getting to the point where it's well over 100 years that we've been doing this
with
some of these signs, but they have evolved along the way. So maybe we should just go through the different color signs, what they signify, what they tell us, and you know, maybe just a little bit of interesting stuff along the way here and there, because we'll even get to traffic lights, and there's a really fascinating example of a traffic light here that we need to get to.
Yeah, the a lot of this information is going to come to you from the U.S. Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is a thing. And
it's a long name.
It's a long name, but they were working on a lot of other stuff too. I'm sure they didn't have too much time to spend on the name. But one thing that's great here is that you can find a list of the method behind the madness on road sign colors, because there are quite a few. Like black is a regulation, right? Or blue is a road user service guidance. So that would be like scenic route.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to kind of step through the different colors?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's start with red.
So
red, this is the most critical or crucial information on the road. And if you think about it, you know, that's the stop sign, the yield signs, the no parking signs, wrong way.
Do not enter.
Do not enter, signs like that. These are signs that were standardized back in the 1920s. But there's an interesting side note to the whole stop sign thing that we'll get to, I promise, when we talk about colors. But red signs are right now typically meant for, you know, like a warning or something, you know, do not do something or telling you to do something.
They're prohibitive or they're a
advisory
command.
Information. Yeah, it's a command is maybe the best way to put it. That's right. Let's see. Let's move on to orange and yellow. These are also warm colors, I guess, and it's funny to talk about them like this, but the warm colors are meant to inform motorists of temporary and permanent hazards. So a permanent hazard, and this is kind of a strange way to think about this, a permanent hazard would be like the school zone or maybe, you know, like a pedestrian crossing.
Right, or possibility of a rock slide.
Curves ahead, you know, that kind of sign, with the angle.
Or deer crossing.
Yeah, deer crossing is a good one, or four-way intersection signs or dead-end signs, things like that. That's a permanent hazard ahead.
Yeah.
A temporary hazard, like an orange sign.
Road work.
Yeah, road work. It's always road work, but that's only since 1964. Prior to 1964, there were no orange road signs used because it had poor visibility at night, you know, so there's no real great contrast there that would stand out if you use black letters on orange. And because of an advancement in reflective aluminum is what brought about the orange possibility, I guess, to road signs. And we've always used that for road work or temporary hazards from that point forward. Moving on to green, blue, and brown signs. These are the cool and neutral color signs.
Right.
This is less crucial information. When you think about it, it's stuff that's intended to not distract the driver. It's something that doesn't call the driver into immediate action.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which is morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Oh, wait, you know what? Let me amend my earlier statement. I misinformed us accidentally. I have my colors switched up. Brown would be, in this case, scenic route or you know, this is a scenic view. Blue would be something like the rest stop.
Okay, so brown is like outdoor recreation or points of interest, things like that, right? Blue, yeah, you said rest stops. Oh, restaurants. That's another one. You know that, you know, when you're on the highway and think, here's the way I was thinking about this. This is the simplest way to understand all this, I think. If you've been on the road a lot, you know, if you're someone who takes road trips or whatever, you know that when you're on the road, you know to look for those bright blue background signs that have, you know, all the little, I guess it would be squares where they advertise restaurants or they advertise, for, you know, the fuel stops, what stops are going to be there. And you know then when you're driving that if you don't see a blue sign, as soon as you see a blue sign, rather, that's when you look to determine which exit you're going to take in order to fuel up or to stop for gas or to, you know, spend the night somewhere maybe if you have an overnight trip. The green signs are intended for, you know, things like exit or, you know, directional signs, I guess. It's always the background color for the signs that hang above the highway.
That tell you this lane 285, things like that.
Exactly right. And you get so conditioned to the idea that you're looking for those great big giant, you know, billboard sized green signs that it becomes second nature that when you're driving, if you're looking for a road ahead, you know, you're going to have to switch roads. You're going to have to take an exit or whatever. You see that green sign, you know, just instantly that color. That's one that you need to pay attention to right now. But if you're not doing that, you don't even pay attention to it. You don't look at the exit signs. You don't look at, you know, the big signs on the highway if you don't necessarily care about where you're headed at that moment. You know you're going to be on that main road for a long time.
Yeah.
You just don't even bother with it. And that's what's nice about this is that it kind of gives you that freedom to pick and choose what you pay attention to.
Yeah, it's so intuitive. And when you think about it just from a design perspective, there's a lot of design, right? The consideration and philosophy that goes into what makes a traffic sign most effective, but there's a lot of social design too, or social engineering to raise us all to understand these rules of the road. One thing that I think has been really well done is to make these things helpful but not distracting.
Yes,
you know, and that's something that I'm still impressed with, although I will tell you, Scott, for a long time, it used to be a pet peeve of mine that I thought road signs were really negative, you know, where were all the nice ones? It was all do not enter, stop,
don't go
this fast. Why couldn't there, I used to ask myself, why couldn't there just be a road sign that said, great job?
Is this part of your stand-up routine?
You know, it was. No, I'm kidding.
It could work.
Well, it'd have to be funny, but the pieces are there. So I started looking at some of the language of road signs, right?
Sure.
Like we don't see any really long sentences. If we see a word, it's not going to be more than maybe four words.
Yeah. That's a good point. And that's kind of like the billboard idea too, right? I mean, the simpler, the better, the big bold text, the better off you are. I mean, there's a whole philosophy behind that as well. And that's exactly what's at play with these signs is that, you know, when you see a railroad crossing sign that's crossed, you know, you don't even have to really read it. You know what that is. You know that sign means railroad crossing.
Yeah.
And typically you're headed towards a crossing you could see anyways. But the speed limit signs. I mean, those things are laid out so that really you don't even read speed limit. You just look at the number. You just see the number that's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of signs like this, like the keep right sign. And we're talking about black and white signs at this point. These are the ones that are intended for clarity. They're intended for just immediate grabbing of information that, you know, you don't have to really concentrate on the sign, but you know what it says.
Right.
And these will often have arrows and, big bold depictions of, you know, maybe a median in the road so that, you know to keep right ahead, that you don't accidentally end up in the left-hand lane. Stuff like that, just really, really simple, but they indicate upcoming potential hazards. And there's also a variation of this, you know, these black and white signs.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the signs that are a black sign with white font on top of it, or white text on top.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are for things like, I don't know if I've ever seen this, Ben. A nighttime speed limit sign. You ever seen nighttime speed limit signs?
I have not. I don't obey the speed limit after dark. No, I'm just kidding.
Apparently, they're a black field with white font on top of them.
To increase visibility?
Yeah, exactly right. And there's also, think about one-way signs. Those are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are also trucking regulatory signs. You know, like signs that tell trucks that, you know, all commercial vehicles have to go this way. Things like that.
Yeah.
So these are the signs that, again, clarity is the primary focus. They're advisory signs. They tell you of important information, but super fast. You're able to grasp it quickly without even really, really concentrating on it, without really thinking about it. You get the information. And that's the way most signs work.
Yeah. And once people get used to that kind of thing, become accustomed to it, it's very difficult to change. Now, one thing that people who are not from the United States probably notice when they watch a show from the U.S. or when they visit here is that our signs are radically different from most of the other places you'd be hanging out. And that's because there's a little bit of international intrigue here.
Hmm.
The United States has not signed the, because, you know, as soon as somebody can make a bureaucracy, there'll be another group ready to make some more paperwork. There's a thing called the Vienna Convention on Road Signs and Signals, right? Sounds like it comes from the United Nations, and you're right, it does. It's also called the Convention on Road Signs and Signals. And this is, they've got a good aim. They want to increase road safety, aid international traffic by making all of the signs follow the same rules.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't really investigated, but
right.
But off the bat, I don't like it.
Okay, just that's how I like to do stuff too. Is I like just go for an opinion, you know what
right.
I mean, and stick with it. So this revised actually another treaty that was 1949 Geneva Protocol, and you know a lot of this stuff originates in Europe, where you can wake up one day and drive across three or more countries, mm-hmm. you know, so you need to have a little bit of familiarity. The United States, however, instead, we have the Federal Highway Administration, right? And then the DOT, they specify traffic signs, road service markings, signals, and they do this through this document, the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices.
Yeah, and you can look that up. That's if you just search the acronym, you're able to find that because it's a .org.
Yeah.
And it's a little more complicated, the website, than that. But if you just search the keywords there, you'll be able to find it.
Right. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. It's not the most thrilling read.
No, it's not. But, I mean, you can dig some stuff out of there and then further investigate like we've mm-hmm. done with a little bit of this. But maybe, you know what, maybe we should talk a little bit more about some of the history because here's where some of the interesting twists come in. And this is maybe not surprising to a lot of people, but stop signs weren't always red. Not always.
What color were they?
They were yellow at one point. Yellow with black writing. And believe it or not, that was the standard color back in the 1920s. That was the standardized form of the stop sign in the 1920s.
And that makes sense because, as we said, yellow is the color for permanent hazards,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure, yeah. Now, but they weren't always yellow either. The first stop sign, which came about in, 1915 in Detroit, was actually black letters on a white background, so it's dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were lots of other colors that were used everywhere else, you know, because people said, well, we do need a stop sign.
Right.
But there's no standardization of the color. So you could travel from county to county, city to city,
mm-hmm.
and all stop signs would be different shapes, different colors. different types of lettering, you know, different treatments to them, you know, whether they had reflectors on them or not. It wasn't until the 1920s that they standardized the color to yellow with black letters, but not the shape. The shape was also, I mean, you could still find stop signs that were an unusual shape.
Yeah, like a square or just a circle.
And, well, the reason was, and this is pretty interesting too, I think, this is kind of one of the little side notes here, is that for a long time, they kept signs square or rectangle because it was cheaper to make them that way. Mm-hmm. And the material, the machine that created the signs had a maximum width of, think of about 2 feet.
Yeah.
And they decided that's it. We're limited to 2 feet wide, so the biggest signs can be 2 feet wide.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to be non-reflective aluminum because they didn't have it at the time. They're going to be stamped out. They're going to be square or, you know, I guess diamond shape if you turn one sideways.
Right.
But, but they're all going to have this shape. So think about a stop sign that's an octagon shape.
Hmm.
That one has a lot of wasted material when you cut away everything else. You know, there's a lot of material that just doesn't make it through. You know, you have to trim off the extra.
Right.
And it's a very cost ineffective way to make signs.
Yeah.
Is if you're trimming away extra material and just throwing that stuff away. And the same thing with the diamond shape. Well, I guess not diamond shape, but the triangle shape.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of the yield signs. So a similar thing, you know, but eventually they decided that, you know, it's important to keep those that shape because people recognize that shape. And because we don't have reflective materials and because red is so hard to read at night, which is, boy, that's another angle. I'm jumping ahead, but because they're hard to read at night, because they don't reflect anything, we need to rely on the shape of them to tell the motorists what to do.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
I never thought I'd take my 3 young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And the whole red thing.
Right.
That's another story, right, Ben?
Yeah, yeah. In 1954. See, the thing that held this back was it was a material science problem for the red sign. And that changed in 1954 when the people making these signs, manufacturers, were able to use a durable, fade-resistant red coating. So that that allowed for a higher visibility. And that, you know, that continues today as we see the materials evolving.
Yeah, that's still not the reflective aluminum that we're talking about,
right,
from the mid-1960s.
Yeah.
I think that was in 1964, I believe, when that came about.
Yeah.
So it was just a better system that allowed them to use red, because where prior it would just be like, look like a blank sign at night.
And there's another thing here that's pretty important to note. If a stop sign looks like all the other permanent hazard yellow signs, then people are less likely to see it and immediately stop, which is why that sign in the United States is so unique, because it's there's not really another group of octagonal signs used for anything.
No, and it's the color as well. I mean, the color alerts you that something is up. There's a dramatic warning here. And the same thing with the yield sign. The yield sign was yellow at one point. It was yellow with black writing. And to maximize visibility, they finally decided to switch it over to, you know, that thick red border with red text and, you know, the white background, I guess.
Yeah.
But again, for visibility, and reflective aluminum helps all these tremendously because you're able to see them at night. But, you know, the shape does indicate to you what the sign says anyways, even if you can't read it. The other thing is that no parking signs used to be round and yellow with black text on them. And the round shape was another one that was a cost ineffective, because a lot of that trimmed away material was just wasted. It was lost. So they went to making them rectangle shape. And again, you know, white background with red font on them. And reflective aluminum. So all this plays in. I mean, it all feeds into each other to make a better system.
Yeah.
Which is hopefully where we're at now.
Yeah, hopefully. And it is true that there's still a variation state by state, depending on what kind of sign you're talking about, right? We all know some of the big, super popular national signs, like the stop sign, the speed limit sign, stuff like that. But then there are also signs for, you know, pedestrian crossings, which might be different state to state. And you might find yourself living in a state that has its own unique signs, because this is one of those things where when we started looking at it, we saw that there was this rabbit hole that just goes on. There's a history behind the signs. You know, the stop sign itself, we could have just done a podcast on that with
probably all the
weird stuff that happened there. But there's one other fascinating piece of traffic direction that we have not talked about yet.
Yeah, traffic control device that most of us are familiar with, the traffic lamp.
Yeah.
Traffic light.
Stoplight.
Stoplight, whatever
That's
you want to
call it.
Street
name, yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. It's an awkward way to say it, I guess. But you may not think about this, and I just want to quickly mention this, I guess, before we wrap up. But you wonder why red is on top. Why is red on top of a traffic lamp?
Yeah, because it's green on the bottom, yellow in the middle, red at the top.
Well, it's for this is the actual official description for why it's that way. It's for increased visibility, because if a vehicle is cresting a hill, the red light would come into view first, alerting the driver that they have to stop.
Oh,
makes sense, I guess.
That's
if you
smart.
Don't see it lit, you assume that it's green. It could go yellow, I guess, but you're assuming that it's green.
And there, you know, of course, there are some places where the stoplights are horizontal, right?
Yeah.
But there's also, I think there is a town that has an upside down spotlight.
This is so strange, right? I mean, this stoplight is completely reversed of the one that we're accustomed to seeing here in the United States. And this happened a long time ago. Lights were standardized in 1925, the traffic lamps were. So 1925 is when they decided that all of them are going to have, you know, red on top, yellow in the middle, and green on the bottom. And there's a story behind all that as well, with the yellow light and where that happened. But there is one town in New York, right? It's Tipperary Hill.
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of funny. I'm just going to read this. It says, one primarily Irish-populated town in upstate New York called Tipperary Hill objected to the placement of British red over Irish green, and local Irish immigrant youths would throw stones at the town's red light atop the first traffic signal that the town had. And it became such a prevalent issue that the town released a green over red traffic light in place of the traditional standardized version, which still remains in operation today. So right now, you can go to Tipperary Hill in New York and see this this green over red stoplight. And I've seen a lot of people online that take photos with this, a lot of Irish Americans, I guess,
or
people visiting from Ireland.
Uh-huh.
And they take a photo, you know, with the green light behind them. It's kind of funny. I mean, it's a funny thing to do.
And if you have visited that area, we'd love to see your photo from it. But there's other stuff we can talk about that we might want to save for different podcasts. Like,
I guess so. I mean, the last one little quick thing that I want to say about this, and it kind of ties in with the signs, and I think we need to mention it right now, is that if you think about it, the colors of the stoplight match the sign methodology that we use here in the United States.
And that's
that red, you know, on top, which means immediate action or stop.
Right.
The yellow is caution, which is the same with signs.
Yeah.
And green typically means uninterrupted travel. I mean, you know, for the exit signs or directional signs or whatever. So even the colors of the stoplight match the methodology that we have for the coloring of the signs. And there's a lot of planning and a lot of thought that goes into that whole process.
It's all connected, man.
It is.
But let's end on a question. What are some of the weird or most unique signs in your neck of the woods? Let us know. We'd love to see them, because I don't know about you, Scott, but have you ever been around somebody who collects a bunch of old signs?
Yes.
I love that. I think enough time has passed now that I can confess to stealing a sign when I was a kid.
Oh, no.
I, you know, it's weird how naive you can be. I didn't know that. It didn't occur to me that that would be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I get in trouble.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. But the sign was ultimately, I think, returned. It was taken away from me.
it's back in its rightful place.
So I love seeing those signs, and I'd love to do, we could do a podcast just on the traffic light itself. Like, how do they coordinate, and is there a citywide system?
You know, we've talked about that in the past, that we would do, you know, the cycles of the lights, because some of them have so many different cycles per intersection. And the main computer that controls thousands of intersections in a city.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating, too. So there's a lot to talk about for traffic control and traffic lights in particular. So I think traffic light evolution is a good one.
Yeah.
Traffic light control. I mean, there's just so much there.
Mm-hmm. And let us know what you think about this. And if you have another topic in your city, guys, I have the topic that you should definitely cover. Why haven't you covered it yet? We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can send us an email directly. We are
CarStuff at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.